As I mentioned, across license, each party is licensing not only the things that they have the right to license at this current time, but also those things that it might acquire in the future. There's also the concept with a cross license of a capture date or a futures date, whereby anything, and it can be the agreement date, the date the agreement is signed by both parties, but anything that is entitled to a patent application that's entitled to a filing date prior to the capture date would be licensed to both parties. It is really, as I mentioned, it's the mainstay of operating companies' freedom of action, and there are a large number of cross licenses that get into every year. A one-way grant, you find one-way grants typical of MPEs because they don't have any operating business. They're non-practicing entities, so they don't have need for a license. You also see it common with patent aggregators like RPX and AST, where they either acquire patent assets that they can license or acquire the right to sublicense certain of their participating members. And the enumerated variant, now the enumerated variant is just you're just getting a patent license to a bunch of listed assets. And it can be combined with a portfolio license if, for instance, you want to have differing rights for an enumerated list of patents and then have either a broader or a narrow set of rights for the rest of the portfolio that a company maintains. The sliver license, typically, in most cases, you don't need a sliver license. It's sort of implied, but most people don't like implied rights. They like to make it explicit. And so anything that is necessarily infringed by the underlying technology or asset would typically be licensed in a sliver, and it just gives the parties some comfort that they have a definitive scope. Sometimes the scope of an implied license is a little bit uncertain. Sliver licenses come in handy, and they usually, in most cases, become express license agreements. As I mentioned, springing license can be combined with a portfolio license. So if you have a portfolio license or a cross license, that's a term, and the parties have a concern that maybe one of the parties or both the parties might sell the patents to other parties, either during the term or after the term, then sometimes you put in place a springing license that'll grant each of the parties a license if the patent is transferred to a third party or if the license is transferred to an MPE, and that would, of course, be more of a life of patents type of grant. The LOT network, the License on Transfer Network, which is an organization, they use a springing license that triggers when a patent is owned by a patent assertion entity as defined in the LOT network agreement. As I mentioned, the corollary to the springing license is a guillotine license. Guillotine licenses can also be included with cross licenses. So if, for instance, a party is acquired by another party and ceases to be a separate entity, you could terminate the license in the agreement. You could argue that a term license is really a guillotine license. It cuts off after the stated term. Now I'm going to talk about a couple of the key considerations for patent license agreements. Obviously, we've talked quite a bit about which patents are licensed, so I'm going to go through here. And then the concept of a sliver being necessarily infringed by the underlying technology or the underlying asset. The scope of the license activity is critical importance, right? So is it going to include service rights? What are the geographies? Is it worldwide? Is it U.S. only? Is it Germany only? What is the geographical scope of the license? Have-made rights, are you going to include have-made rights? Under what circumstances are you going to be able to protect your suppliers from a claim from the licensor? The corollary of that is foundry rights. Foundry rights allow a semiconductor manufacturer to take a design of a customer, make a chip, and then have that chip be licensed under the licensor's patents unless foundry rights are negated, right? So if you're looking to prevent something like that from happening, then you have to negate the foundry rights. Releases are critically important. Licenses only operate going forward. They don't operate going backwards. Patent exhaustion is a going forward doctrine. So releases become a critical part of any non-exclusive license because it protects prior activity. Licensed product, in a typical cross-license agreement, the licensed products will be different because the business needs of each company are different. You can have all sorts of exclusions and exceptions to what's licensed and what's not licensed. That would be very dependent on, of course, the parties and their particular concerns. I think I've covered have made limitations. License terms could be life of patents or 3, 5, 10, whatever term a party might select. Payments, a lot of licensors prefer one-time lump sum payment. There's also installment payments, and then, there, of course, there's royalties. Obviously, with a royalty-bearing agreement, you have an ongoing relationship with the licensor has an ongoing relationship with the licensee, and there's obviously there's an obligation to pay, and there's actually collection of the money. Royalties also entail a lot more language in the agreement because there needs to be the right to audit, needs to be royalty collecting periods. What is the basis of the royalty? What's the royalty rate?